Every lap in under a minute means every second matters. Bosch Power Tools Perth Super Sprint, May 17 to 19. Book now at Ticketek. Supercars, unforgettable.
Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out.
A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
Hey there, it's Noons, Aaron Noonan with another edition of the V8 Sleuth Podcast, powered by Castrol. And this week, I've had a sit down, the first of two parts, with a guy who I've been wanting to talk to for a long time. Now, Barry Rogers has been very visible within the Gary Rogers Motorsport Team's racing program and activities for the best part of the last decade, but I've always felt there was more of the Barry story that hasn't really been told. So, I ventured out to Gary Rogers Motorsport to sit down with him and learn about some of his early years, what set him on the racing path, and some cool memories of going to races with his dad, Gary. Now, Gaz has been on the pod before, so check it out if you haven't heard that episode. It was a few years back. You can listen in the V8 Sleuth vault of episodes, and you can even watch it on our YouTube channel, V8 Sleuth on YouTube. That one's on video. You can check that one out. Now, on the first part of two eps, I chat with Baz about his upbringing, that early love of racing and business and the pursuits that he had before he entered the business of GRM just over a decade ago. We talk about one of V8 supercar fans' favourite topics, the Volvo racing program. And he opens up about the culture clashes, the problems that happen when you fuse a larrikin Aussie team like theirs with a Swedish racing program. He reveals the choice of two future stars of supercars that the team had at the end of 2012. We talk about the one that they picked, Scott McLaughlin, the Frenchman, Alex Prema. We talk, of course, about a GRM favourite too, James Golding. The story of how he came to be at GRM as an apprentice is a cracker, and it's one that underlines, if you want it bad enough, you'll go after it. Now, we covered GRM's exit from Supercars 2 in 2019, and how and why that all happened, and the roads that led to the team exiting the V8 category. We also talk about the difficult departure of Garth Tander. Now, I spoke with Garth about this earlier this year on an episode of the pod. Now I've got the other side from Barry and all the things that mattered at GRM's end to that decision being made. Barry, if you've seen him on TV or read about him in the media or seen or heard him around the racetrack, he's bouncy, he's enthusiastic, he's energetic. It's no surprise he's been a runner for a long time. He's run marathons. He doesn't have a lot of energy to do that, but also to stay up with it in business and Australian motorsport. You'll gain so much more insight into this guy in this episode. I know I certainly did, and I think you will too. So let's rip in. It's part one of Barry Rogers. Enjoy this episode of the V8 Sleuth Podcast, powered by Castrol. Barry Rogers, hello and welcome.
G'day, Aaron. Lovely to have you here at GRM.
Oh, mate, I've been here before to do pods. I've sat in the same chair with Bargs, with Marcus, done Gary downstairs and Barry upstairs. Right. It sounds like we've got the perfect set.
Yeah, well, Gary's not real keen on handling the stairs these days, but anyway, we're up here and thanks for coming down.
Oh, no, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me. When I was talking to you in the lead-up to coming to see you to have this chat, it occurred to me that there's sort of a Barry Rogers that I don't think we've explained to our motorsport audience, probably the fans of supercars and TCR and racing of the last probably 10-ish years we've seen you around. You were around on the scene before that, but we didn't really see or know you. But I want to do the Barry story because there's a lot of Gary, but there's got to be a bit of Barry here.
So nothing too exciting. It's probably more about football and cricket and running.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. Footy, you're a Tigers man, aren't
you? Tigers man, yes. We've had a bit of glory, but anyway, it'll come again. You're a Hawks man, so you know.
I was going to say, we're pretty much at the same point right now. Three premierships in short space, and now we're just going to just suck for a while, basically. So cars, were you interested in cars as a kid, or were you doing your own thing back in the day?
No. Look, growing up, of course, with dad racing cars, you're always really interested. My mum really brought us up. Dad left home, I think, when I was about three or so. But whenever the racing was on the TV, mum would always have it on. And if they showed dad's car, I always always think, gee, he's waving at me. You know, I'd always think his hand was going up and he's waving. And, yeah, look, no different than the little kid had the matchbox cars in the sandpit. Used to roar around in my dragster bike pretending I was up Mount Panorama and had the billy cart flying down the hill, did all that. Never got into the go-karts. Dad was a bit too tight to buy me a go-kart. And
smart.
He kept buying smart. me running shoes and footy boots. And that's it. But love the racing. Love the camaraderie of it all. Really enjoyable.
So giving you that insight into your family background as a kid, it's often that I think people who don't know you guys or don't know motor racing think you're brothers because you're just so welded in the way that you think. Yeah. Of course, it helps that your names rhyme and all that sort of stuff too. But has this motorsport stuff of this period of your life brought you closer to your dad?
Yeah, to be honest, been very, very fortunate to spend, the last 10, 11 years travelling with dad and, we've had some great times. There've been some challenging times, but that's life, of course. And, I wouldn't say necessarily closer. We're always very close anyway. As much as mum brought us up, we weren't brought up in that era where you saw your dad every second weekend, but I never felt like that I didn't see my dad. We saw him quite a bit. Look, very fortunate to spend all the time that we do and, with the travel and the camaraderie of doing all that. And, quite often, we're very tight in the budgets here, Aaron, and quite often we share the same bed when we travel away and the pillows are down the middle. So it's all good fun. And it's been a really special time.
That was probably too much information than we actually need. Barry, we like to go in depth, but perhaps not that far in depth into the start of play. What do you remember about race? Did you go to racing as a kid or were you away watching on TV?
No, went locally. Never used to, Dad wouldn't take us to Bathurst or anything like that, but certainly remember going to Calder Park back in the 70s and when Dad was running around in Escort. And one of my sort of fond memories, if you call it that, of that was, having a wheelbarrow full of, wheels and tyres off his little Escort and wheeling him up to Stucky Tyres to get some fresh tyres put on his car and queued up behind the people. And next minute, Tony Edmondson, who was the king of sports sedans back in the day in his Alpha, pushed in front of me. And I reminded him my dad was next. And Stucky looked after me and Dad got his tyres. And I still think Edmondson cleaned him up though.
So you'd remember Escorts and A9X Tiranas and Commodores and that sort of period of stuff.
All that, one of my fondest, the Escort was a little beauty back in the day. But then Dad's the Tirana sports sedan, I used to love that because obviously the engine was well back into the cabin. And as he was going out to the dummy grid, he would sit me up on the box, where the engine was under next to him and, you'd feel the engine vibrating through your pants. You look at really good memories and, going back to the Sandown or the Hang 10 500 in the day, you probably may or may not remember this, but lap timing back then, there wasn't that soft or anything like that. You'd stand up behind the glass, you'd grid up there as people behind the glass as your cars were in order. And I think this particular year, I don't know who Dad was driving with, it might have been Giesler, I think. But anyway.
Oh, Fred Geisler's car. He finished second.
Yeah, that's right. And I was behind the glass in wherever he qualified, fifth or sixth or something. And as your car passes another car, you have to pass the person next to you. For the 500Ks, you're standing there swapping spots in this queue.
That's a long time.
And there's a couple of little arguments along there. I think whoever Larry had for him, you were very argumentative, I reckon, back at the time.
That sounds about right, yeah.
So really good memories of that. And, it was – look, a fun time, a lot of larrikins about in those times. Used to love Jimmy Richards. I remember when he had the big M Falcon. Dad walked me into his truck one day and there's Jimmy having a long neck beer after the end of the day the big long neck stubby, and I always remind Jimmy of that.
So you grew up around it and you were into it and it was a thing. It wasn't a case of, something Dad went and did. You were around. You were part of it.
Yeah, loved it. And Peter Brock, it was, I don't know why, but the older man at the time. I know we've got James Moffat here these days. I didn't mention that James at Allen was okay, but I was a Brocky man as a kid growing up and probably because Dad had a holding, I suppose. I'm not sure why, but that's probably what it was. Yeah.
So footy, did you play?
Yeah, played footy, junior footy at Nunna Wadding and Forest Hill. That's sort of where we were brought up and school footy. And then sort of got into the running, did a lot of running over the years. So,
track, cross country?
Yeah, track and cross country. Yeah. And then sort of when I finished school, I see all my mates, putting a bit of weight on and, you have a few beers when you start going to uni and that. So I was pretty disciplined. If I was going out on a Friday night, we'd have six beers, I'd go and run 6Ks first. And as I got older, I started doing 2Ks per beer and then started running marathons and all that sort of thing. And now I've got two new hips, so those days are done too.
When was your first marathon?
Melbourne Marathon. The very first time I did that was about 93 or so, I reckon. And then I did about 10 or 12 marathons. Did Boston Marathon a couple of times there. Really enjoyed the running. To be honest, I always just run by myself, during the week, run every day. And it was good thinking time, you know. It's amazing the problems you solve when you're out running and get back and quickly scribble them down on a notepad. Mm. It was good.
Are you still out there?
Not so much these days. As I said, both hips replaced 3 years ago. So I'll run a couple of times a week and just get on the bike and do a bit of riding or something just try and keep them in reasonable shape. That's it. So I can keep having a beer, Aaron.
Yes, it's all for the beers. Exactly right. Yeah. So you mentioned uni. What'd you do?
I did a Bachelor of Business at RMIT, but in property. So I'm actually a property valuer worked in property in town for about 4 or 5 years, but at the same time I was working at the car yard. Dad had a car yard at Glen Waverley, so on the weekends, certainly through the uni days, Mum or Dad wouldn't get me books, so you have to save the money to buy your own books and get fuel in your car. So I'd go and work at the yard on a Saturday and wash a few cars and try and sell a couple of cars, because you always got more money for selling them than you did washing them.
Did
that through those years. And then sort of over time, when I had finished uni and I was working for a valuer in town, I just found it a bit boring. You're sort of locked up in an office, and I enjoyed talking to people. And, you know, I was still doing the car yard on the weekends, working for Dad on weekends. And then I said to him one day, I think I'd like to do this full time. So that sort of happened. Worked for Dad for a couple of years and then started my own business for sort of about 15 years or so. And yeah, so the car business for our family has been fantastic. It's changed a bit now. It's mainly the real big companies that have taken over all the dealerships, but really it was a good fun time. And the race shop was out the back of the dealership.
Yeah, I remember
all that?
Yeah. So it was little and then it got bigger and it sort of took up more and more room. And then eventually
that's it.
Came here to Danny.
Yeah, and probably the year, you talk about the year when it really became, if you want to call it professional more so than a hobby. It probably was that 96, 97 sort of era where it went from sort of two people and a couple of the workshop guys helping out to, Dad probably had six people up then, which was a lot of people back in that day in a race shop, and that's probably when it really changed.
Did you ever get roped in to be on the race team at any weekend? No. On those weekends when you needed more people, they didn't go, hey, Baz, put on a race suit and a helmet or anything?
Look, anyone that knows me with a spanner or something, I am useless. And I'm the first to admit it. Enjoy going along, and if I can run around and pick up some sandwiches or do something like that, I'm happy to do so. But
safer for all concerned.
You wouldn't let me loose on a car, not even checking tyre pressures.
No, fair enough. So I wanted to mention too, because you talk about running your own business. So wasn't that out of Pakenham that you had a bit of land out there and you turned it into a car dealership that grew and grew?
That's it, yeah. Bought some land.
Separate to the Gary Rogers.
Separate to Glen Waverley. Yeah, bought some land out of Pakenham back in the early 90s.
Was there anything out at Pakenham?
No, it was pretty quiet out there.
So
we're talking
for those not in Melbourne, Pakenham's
out in the burbs. And, there was, I think the population back then was about 10,000. It's now about, I think it's nearly 100,000 now. So, yeah, just sort of a shot. How it happened, I live on 20 acres at home, and I needed a tractor. I was looking for just a cheap tractor. And Dad used to drive past on his way down to Longwarry where he lived, drive down the Princess Highway. And one day he rang me and said, there's a tractor for sale on the side of the road in Pakenham. So I thought, righto. So I whipped out. And when I went there to look at the tractor on this day, the old fella that was selling it was in his shed talking. And he said, just wait here, because it was raining. He said, wait inside here. And I could hear that he was talking to a real estate agent about selling his land. So when he'd finished talking to the lady, I said to him, oh, you're looking at selling here? And anyway, we ended up doing a deal there and then. You know, shook hands.
So you weren't even looking for a looking for a tractor, and you bought a whole pile of land.
I did. Yeah.
That's a little bit of a step up.
It was. And the tractor was $3,000, I still remember. And I said to him, you'll give me the tractor now, wouldn't you? And it was Dutch, actually. And he said, no. Still paying for the tractor. So so that's how that all happened. And, rented that land out for a few years and eventually built a dealership out there, and it was a really good area. It was a growth area, and the sort of family type cars that we were dealing in, a bit like Will Brown. You know, we love to hustle around, and that's how it was, and it was good. Yeah.
I love the and your dad's got it, and you've got it too. It's the not the negative tinge, the car dealer element. I love that about the wheeler and dealer element around business and motorsport. It all clicks together in terms of trying to make stuff happen that otherwise probably doesn't happen. There's a lot of similarities, and the two things kind of fuse together. I think you guys have been one of the really great proponents of that.
No, thanks for that. Yeah, look, Dad's always been a really positive person, and doesn't dwell on things. Just and that's sort of what he taught me growing up. Don't don't dwell, just press on, and you know, have a good attitude. Look, we'll have down days, of course you do, but you just got to, you know, look at the big picture of things. And you know, life, if you talk about running, life is a big cross country course, isn't it? You pull up to a hurdle, you can either lie down and look at it, or you can just get over it and keep moving. And that's sort of the attitude that we have. And yeah, it's served us well, and we've had a lot of fun too along the way.
Would you have thought back in your younger days that you would have expected that your dad would turn up on national TV in various outfits, state of dress, cross-dressing, all sorts of costumes and gear? Did he show signs back in the day, or did this just evolve over the years?
I think it might have just evolved over the years, but he was always a bit quirky of things, and probably, yeah, I never saw him wearing ladies' clothes growing up, but he always was out there a bit with his fashion. And but look, with his personality, it is probably no surprise. He has no shame. He's probably not been right, but he's got a great personality. He likes to see people have a laugh and a smile, so he's prepared to take the hit for others, and we've had a lot of fun out of it, I can tell you.
What was the best dress-up that you went, oh, that's a good one, and what was the one that you went, that's too far over the line and I'm embarrassed to be yourself?
It's pretty hard to go past the ever one at Adelaide in 2014 when the Volvo first got launched, and we had him dressed up as he was Bjorn, wasn't he? He was Bjorn. He wanted to be. He said, "Who was the most handsome ever one?" And you know, so he had to be that one. And so, so that was probably the good one. You know, probably the Monica Lewinsky days and that at Winton back then. If you remember, you probably remember Aaron. A couple of those ones were a little bit.
We're going back here about 25 years ago. I think it is pretty much. Time's flown.
We're going to Bathurst that year, of course, with the when we dressed him up. What's the bus where the...
Oh, Priscilla.
Priscilla. Queen of the Priscilla. Desert. That was pretty big.
Well, I saw the other day that the Priscilla bus...
It's coming back.
My wife showed me this story. The bus from the movie is being restored.
Right.
I love a bit of sleuthing and a bit of restoration stuff. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. Right. I'm not sure I'm going to become the bus sleuth anytime soon.
That's right. Yeah, but no, that was pretty out there when he... And on that Friday Night Live at Bathurst, I think he jumped in on Crompdale that probably goes down in the memory bank as...
It hasn't been replayed for a reason.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What was the thing that brought you into the business as in Gary Rogers Motorsport? Was it a case of where you were at in your world and what was needed here? What was the story?
Yeah, it's funny. Dad and I, when I had my own business for all those years, we'd talk regularly. We'd talk nearly every day. And because of where I was located on his trip home, he'd often stop in and have a beer on his way home. We'd have a bit of a chat about things. And I had a larger dealership approach me about buying my business there. And I was talking to Dad about it. And he said, you know, told him what the nuts and bolts were of it all. He said, well, you'd be crazy if you didn't do it. I said, yeah, well, anyway, we'll see if it all unfolds. And it did. And he said, well, what are you going to do? And I said, at the time, I think when I finished up, I had 10 or 12 cars left over there. I said, would you mind if I parked them in the back of your work at Dandenong and I'll just, you know, sell them, get rid of the last few from there and I'll give you a hand. It was sort of when the Volvo stuff was being, it just done the deal with Volvo. So it was 2013 and obviously 14 was when we started racing them. And I said, you know, I'm happy to give you a hand for that period of time or whatever. He goes, yeah, that'd be great if you can. And sort of just went from there. I was here for a few months, and a few months has turned into a few years. And I did say to him back then, don't bother paying me. I'll sell my cars and I'll be right. And he still hasn't bothered, but we haven't all. It's been all right, though. It's been good.
the Volvo era is, I mean, there's been some eras at this place or at this team. I mean, there was that great era of Garth and Bargs. I think a lot of people look back on really fondly, and Bargs is back in your world. Yeah. There's, you know, the Monaros still grab plenty of attention, but the Volvo era, I mean, and you've been right around for all of that. It was a short space of time, but it made a massive impact.
Yeah, it was. It was probably a bit of a perfect storm as it was. I mean, a bit of a quirky brand like Volvo to, you know, get back into, you know, a real powerhouse form of motorsport, you know, and supercars and Scotty being there and to his credit, you know, he people were chasing him hard after the 2013 season, and for him to stick around, like he wasn't contracted, for him to stick around and take the risk on the Volvo, you know, it was, you know, look, we're very thankful for what he did for us and staying around for the period that he did, because there's a lot better deals out there for him. But all of that just work, you know, the sound of the car, the whole thing, and you know, of course, Adelaide, the launch with I know we didn't win, but that finish with him and Wing Cup, you know, for P2 behind Lounsey was couldn't have asked for more, and yeah, it was a lot of fun. It looks a shame it all, you know, only went for the 3 years because those cars, as I say, they were just something a bit odd out there, weren't they? It was great. Yeah.
It was a perfect storm, wasn't it? And I think a lot of people actually tend to remember it as Scott winning.
Yeah, they
in
do.
Adelaide.
That's right. For Lounsey, he was out far in front.
He was down the road. Meanwhile, the fight was going on between those other two. But, of course, he drops the F-bomb
on
TV.
Right. Yeah.
It's the best F-bomb that he could have possibly – I mean, at the time he went, oh, shit, sorry.
That's it. Yeah.
But it's the best thing he could have done because it put him into – the nation's conscience of sporting fans beyond motorsport fans because it got replayed on sports shows and panel shows and stuff for the week. And, of course, you know, we know what Scott's done since then, what he's doing now with Roger Penske and IndyCars and everything that's happened over the last decade pretty much since then. But it was the he didn't need to win to make an impact.
And not premeditated. He's just natural. Just Scotty. Just how he is. And, you know, he's got that real great personality and people warm to him. And as you say, it was the timing of that was, it was great. But unfortunately, the Sunday didn't work out quite so well.
Everyone forgets that bit. Everyone forgets. Don't ruin the story.
That's right.
Don't ruin the story.
Yeah.
In that Volvo time, were there times where Volvo and Polestar went, ugh, with some of the hijinks and some of the fun and the way you go about it, were they just not quite in line?
Yeah, look, there's probably no real hiding. And it's probably culture too. You know, the Swedish culture is a lot different to call it our Aussie Ocker type culture. And, you know, you couldn't get, you know, when I say you couldn't get a more serious and dedicated person than Gary, but the public face sometimes is having a bit of fun and often that's his way of dealing with things. And, the cultural differences were difficult from the start. I think there's a bit of, you know, when I say power struggle, you know, Gary's very much protective of what's ours, GRM, and what we're about, and good on him. That's how he's got to where he is. And of course, you know, Polestar, Christian, you know, he's a very similar personality to Gary. And, you know, he was pulling that way, Gary was pulling this way. And, you know, but to get the results we did over that period and the fun that we had, it was a great time. And I think, branding wise, I mean, it certainly helped Volvo at the time, but I think over in Sweden, you know, we'll get messages if the car, Scotty at Phillip Island, we did the big burnout after winning at Phillip Island. I think when Garth might have run out of fuel on the line.
Right.
And, you know, we get emails and, oh, you can't be doing this, the smoke in the environment and all these sort of things, which, hey, we understand the importance of the environment, but motorsport's motorsport. So there was a bit of, I think it was a real love-hate thing. And, look, they stuck by their contract that they had with us, which was a 3 years, but, from the early stages you could feel that it wasn't going to be much more than that.
Was that the only game in town, the Volvo thing? Would you have just been Commodores if that hadn't come along?
Yeah, I think so. Look, there was a bit of talk, obviously, with Chrysler at the time. We had a good contact through their marketing department there, and they were really keen at looking at the supercar thing, and it was getting very close to doing something with Chrysler, and Volvo came in and sort of trumped them, to be honest with you. And by the time that era finished, you know, Chrysler had cooled off on the whole idea. It would have been Commodores otherwise. And then, obviously when they finished, we went back to the Commodores.
There was a bit of work to be done whole pile of new Commodores ready for that next. Let's focus a little bit on some of the people that were around in that period. Yeah. And McLaughlin is clearly, I'm looking over behind you and there's a McLaughlin race suit on the wall here, so that's why he's...
Don't tell him, he might try and get it back off me.
Oh, well, I'll broker a sale for you. I'll do a deal. He was the right guy at the right time and the right place for his career, for where you were at, where that new car was. What did you see in him then? Did you think, we're not going to be able to keep this guy? He's going to end up going on to do other stuff.
Look, GRM's been built on the back of young people, and you know, and it's not just drivers; it's mechanics. You know, Gary is always sniffing around old tractor repair places down the country and looking for the next young 16-year-old mechanic.
Might buy some property too if he sniffs out a tractor.
That's right, and drivers are the same, and we take a lot of pride in bringing young people in to GRM, training them up. And the good ones pay you back by staying for a certain amount of time afterwards. And Garth was really the first one of those. I mean, you know, people were after Garth from the early days too, but he stuck around and, you know, repaid, you know, his time back then and, you know, and then obviously moved on to HRT. And Scotty was the same, you know. Look, to answer your question from the start, of course you could see something special in him. And there's a bit of a story, or not when I say a GRM story, prior to Gary employing Scott for the drive for 2013. Obviously, he filled in for Alex at Sydney in the last round, but they had a test day at Winton, and Cam Waters was there, Scotty, there was a couple of others, and Richard Holloway, he wanted Cam Waters. Gary said, we're taking Scotty. So, I mean, you couldn't have made a mistake either way. I mean, both guys
would have been all right.
been great. But,
just different paths.
But I think, Gary was really keen on him. And his skills were there, but, his personality and the way he just really fitted in with our culture, it really worked well.
There were a lot of wins with the young approach.
Yeah.
There were some losses, but that's just how it goes, some ones that didn't work out. The look to do something different, I mean, Alex Premer. I love the Alex Premer story because, he became a Hawthorn supporter while he was here driving for you. And I think it was just because Hawthorn was winning a lot at the time. But it was left field and it was different. It probably, on the scheme of things, you wouldn't say it worked out, but it was something that wasn't afraid to try something different and left field because I can't think of any other team that would have looked to do that, let alone done it.
Look, how that came about... Gary, in the 80s, when he was racing a BMW 635, went across to Germany and met Charlie Lamb, who was running Schnitzer for BMW and kept in contact with him quite regularly over the years. And when he was looking to do something different, he rang Charlie Lamb up and said, have you got any recommendations of drivers out of Europe? And Charlie gave him two or three names, and Alex was one of those names. And then Gary did a bit of his own homework and thought, yep, I'm going to have a crack here. And, Gary calls him Fritz. I'm trying to work out why, but he gets called Fritz. And
you've got to have a nickname.
Yeah, of course. Everyone's got a nickname except for Gary.
That's the great secret of it. He who makes the nicknames doesn't have one himself.
That's right. But, Alex, he was quirky. I tell you what, he was bloody quick. He was half crazy as well, as we know. But, geez, he was quick. And we still catch up with Alex a little bit. And it's good to see he's going well in the US himself. And I think him and Scotty seem to catch up a little bit over there too. Even you go back, Gary working outside the box of what everyone else was doing. Back when the Gold Coast race, you had to have the internationals come and drive. Yeah. Supercars, I think in the first couple of years, would come up with a list of drivers and you'd have to pick one from the list. And Gary refused to pick from their list. So I think he got onto Lee Diffie over there in the US and got him to refer a few names. And then Gary did his own homework again and we had some good success. I think Patrick Long was probably one of the best ones he picked up out of there over the time.
I was going to go with Paddy. I met Paddy years ago in the UK.
Yeah.
And when the whole Gold Coast 600 format and you had to have an international, I remember in the lead-up there was 17 drivers, however many drivers there were, and there was a magazine story that kind of rated and described who all the guys were, and they ranked Long last, and they kind of went, why is he here? What does this all mean? Yet they didn't know he'd been a Porsche factory junior driver. He'd become a Porsche factory driver. He was so well – and, I mean, Pat's retired now, but he's so well regarded by Porsche that he still does all sorts of stuff connected to them. And he was a very good choice because he did a very good job and everyone went, huh?
That's right.
But it was just – I mean, I remember back to Gary getting John Andretti for Bathurst.
I was about to share a story on that with you.
Love it. More stories, the better.
Well, the John Andretti story is a real interesting one. So that was 1988, is that right? VL Commodore?
Yeah.
So we're at the car dealership and so I would have been 19. It was when I was at uni but working there part-time the Valvoline managing director walked up the driveway. We didn't know who he was, but, out on the hunt trying to sign people up for oil. I think we had BP back at the time at the dealership.
For the dealership, not the racing. Yeah,
correct. And so Gary ended up doing a deal with Valvoline for the dealership oil. And he said,
at the start of the Valvoline relationship? Yeah, right.
And he said, maybe not quite this exact conversation this day, but, in the weeks following after meeting Michael Porter, the fellow's name was, he followed him back up and said, look, I've got to want to put something to you. Would you be interested in sponsoring my car at Bathurst this year? And they weren't, maybe not. And they love the US, of course, Valvoline, big US company. And Gary said, look, I'll get Mario Andretti in the car. So, of course, they're on.
That got his attention.
That got his attention. So, all of a sudden, he's got Valvoline on. And, Mario sort of returned the letter back in the days, obviously before emails and things. Gary wrote a letter to him and he wrote a letter back saying, look, no, I can't make it, but my nephew, John, would come and do it. So, Gary thought, well, any Andretti's better than no Andretti.
It's a name.
Of course,
worldwide name.
He's arrived at the airport to pick John Andretti up when he's arrived in Australia and he's on crutches. He'd broken his leg the previous week or 2 weeks before. And it turned a bit pear-shaped from there. I think John obviously crashed a car at Bathurst that year. And It's how Valvoline started. That's where it all came from back then in 1988. And
I love it.
Been with us ever since. So,
it's a great story. And, of course, John Andretti, who's since passed away sadly in more recent years, has forever a piece of history of Australian motor racing because he won the first Gold Coast Indy Race back in 91 in that Pennzoil, Hall VDS, Lola. And I only say that because it's so fresh in my mind. As we're sitting down to do this, it's just after the Long Beach Grand Prix was on the weekend with IndyCars.
Yep.
And that car, that very car, was running at Long Beach on the weekend,
which was
really, really cool.
Do you sleep, Aaron? You just watch motorsport?
No.
You had a big weekend this weekend, didn't you?
There was plenty of New Zealand supercar watching going on at my place. Yeah. But I didn't bother with Formula 1. I just didn't have time. I was too busy.
We know he was going to win that, don't we?
Yeah, I had a pretty good idea. Just check the results just to see if I was right. And I'm right more often than not with that call these days. But so Scott McLaughlin, Alex Premer, obviously David Wall was here for a while as well.
Yep.
He probably doesn't get the credit he deserves for what he's done in racing and his approach. He's one of the nice guys of motorsport in Australia. And, you know, he's still involved heavily driving and running cars and teams and stuff like that.
Yeah, look, the second Volvo, obviously, the first year we had Robert Dahlgren, that was part of the deal with Sweden.
So you had to take him as part of the deal.
And that's probably, to be honest with you, that was the very first time that we've actually had to take a driver because
you were told
of a requirement. And Gary, that rubbed him up the wrong way because, you know, it's his team. It's, you know, the results are all on his shoulders at the end of the day. And he wants to have control of what can happen. And look, Robert, again, lovely fellow and, you know,
He did actually buy into the whole chaos of this place, didn't he?
Yeah, because, he did.
I mean, the bus trip that year to Bathurst, which was on the TV, he got right into it. He actually did the dress ups. He did all that stuff.
He had no choice. He looked a little bit more reluctant than our boys embrace it. What was
his nickname? Did he get a nickname?
He did have a nickname, and it was Donkey, but I won't go any more.
Probably another.
But the best part, it's probably wrong, but when he was here, and best is a wrong word, it's probably weird. He couldn't work out where the speed cameras were in the place. In that 12 months he was here, he got caught on the Eastlink Dandenong bypass speed camera, I reckon 30 times. So he didn't get paid too much over that period.
So the fines came here, I guess.
They came here and So then obviously after Robert, we had David Wall the second year, and as you say, like, you know, underrated guy, super steady. Is he the quickest bloke out there? No, he's not. But, geez, great to work with. Real team guy. And really the best part of that year was the final race at Sydney at Homebush where he got into the 10 shootout. You know, Brian Boyd, who had supported him for a lot of years, Brian Boyd being the owner of Pace, very good friends with David's late father. And he was there, and it was a special moment there at Homebush for his last round with us. And then, obviously, the final year of Volvo, we got Moff in. And we've sort of built a real relationship with Moff over the years. And, it was, you know, we had actually a couple of good years there in, say, 16 with he and Scotty. I think we went pretty well in the team championship that year. And then 17 with Moff and Garth was a strong year for us too, probably the strongest year as a team we've had. Mm. So, yeah.
Because it was a different guy in the other Volvo against Scott all the time, no one got close to him really though.
No.
Was that a case of no one got comfortable, he was so good, a bit of everything?
Yeah. Look, I'm not quite – I mean, you listen to – you know, if I say I'm listening to the engineers, that'll kill over to listen to this because, you know, he's just – but Scotty,
I'm sure he doesn't listen to podcasts.
No, he probably doesn't. Look, Scotty just loved the car, really loose. And everyone – they'll set the car up how Scotty had it. No one could drive it. He just loved it on that edge and just, you know, just shows, you know, how he was. And, yeah, look, Moff had some good results in it. But, look, no one obviously got really close to him. Yeah.
When I think of more young drivers have had opportunities through this place, and the list is as long as the big long table that we're sitting at here. But I wanted to talk about James Golding for a little while because I think his story is not really told very much. But how did James Golding come on the GRM radar? How did that all start?
That's sort of similar to what I was just talking about earlier. Gary sniffing around the local areas of looking for good young workers. And James Golding comes from Warrigal, which is the next town on from where Gary comes from, being Longwarry. You know, Gary's talking to a few people around there, and there's a local truck building business down there, which Gippsland Bodybuilders, which was James's dad, and I think dad had a bit of work done there, and one thing led to another, and sort of heard of young James was, you know, didn't like school, and that suited Gary, because Gary left school at year 8 or year 9, and he sort of warms to kids that don't like school because he's of the understanding not everyone's got to go to school. Often if you're not into that, you can learn a lot more elsewhere.
You can do a trade, you can do TAFE, you can do
all sorts of
stuff.
He met up with Jimmy or James, and we call him Bieber because he used to have the big fringe and it sort of stuck. He used
very
to have
the
Justin Bieber fringe. So I'll say Bieber because that's how I call him. And met up with him, had a chat to him and offered him a job. And at that point, I think he was 15, And Gary said,
well, and this is in the workshop. This is workshop. Nothing to do with driving.
This is in the workshop, in the sub-assembly room, doing gearbox, you know, assisting our Barry McGall, who's been with us for 20 plus years, rebuilding gearboxes and brake calipers and all those type components. So Gary said, I've got a job for you, but you need to get yourself to Dandenong at 7:30 every day. So James shook his hand and took the job. He'd ride his push bike from home to the Warragul train station. And those that don't know, Warragul to Dandenong, it's about an hour on the train, hour and a bit's a country V-line type train. He would jump on the train, get himself to Dandenong, then he would ride from Dandenong Station, which is about 5 k's from the shop here, to work. He was never late one day, always turned up. He'd be soaking wet some mornings, but always got himself here. And you could just tell from that point that he was a committed young fella. Even if he, you know, as he got older, and you know, when he was obviously finally got his license, you know, he's a sort of young guy that look, enjoys a good time, which is great, but he's not one of these kids that'll ring in sick because he had a big night on the, you know, with his mates. He'd always be at work and committed and as a tradesman, exceptional tradesman, you know. And how he first got a drive for us, well, for, say that, I mean, it was always in the back of Gary's mind, but Scotty really warmed to him. And every test day we'd go to at Winton, he'd always make sure Bieber had his race suit and helmet packed away, but we didn't know. And then Scotty would always be on to us at a test. Give Bieber a couple of laps. Anyway, Gary finally folded one day.
Because at this stage he'd been racing karts.
He'd been racing karts into Formula Ford.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And so we stuck him in, it was one of our Super 2 cars, I think. We must have been running, trying to think who we were running in a Super 2 car. Well, yeah, I don't know. No, maybe we just took another car. No, we weren't.
This was during the Volvo era.
It was during the Volvo era, yeah. So, might have been, maybe it was a Volvo we stuck him in. But anyway, we put him in the car and, you know, I think he was pretty impressive for those that know. And, you know, and then had a bit of a chat to his dad and we worked out a deal to run him in Super 2 the following year. And, yeah, it was pretty solid. And, you know, to see, you know, get his chance with supercars here with us. And then obviously, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it later, but we got out of the supercars and then he was sort of left without a drive and but pressed on and great to see him back on the grid now. You know, as late as the weekend at New Zealand, I see he struggled. His qualifying seemed to struggle, but his racing was exceptional, and that was great.
Do you take a lot of heart out of seeing when young people who, you know, you met him when he's a kid, he's a kid, he's not even a teen, he's a teenager, but not a late teenager, that he's been able to achieve elsewhere? I mean, it's almost like you'd rather them have the success while they're here, but if you can be a part of the journey to get them to where they get to, you still take some.
You do. And, you know, you feel really great. You love to see people achieving things. And, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, from the early days, Garth and you know, you look at Scotty overseas, even when you watch, I know he struggled a bit on the weekend or this morning, I see he struggled a little bit. I'm not sure what happened, but I see he has a few laps down.
So was as far as I've got to. I saw the results.
But when, you know, you're so proud of them and you really, you know, it's great. And to be honest, to all those guys, to their credit, they always, you know, always touching base with you, send you a message, saying good day and doing things. So, yeah, no, really good.
Do you know how to find the right oil for your car? Now you can find out quickly and easily online, thanks to Castrol's Rego to Oil tool. Simply type in your Rego, select your state, and within seconds you'll know the best Castrol products to unlock the edge of performance in your car. So what's your car best suited to? Just search Rego, the number 2, and oil, and find out.
You mentioned there the supercar era, so that ended in 2019 for you guys. So the Volvo thing went from 14, 15, 16.
Yep.
Then it was recalibrate to Commodores, build a whole pile of new cars for a new year.
Yep, a couple of VFs for 2 years.
Main game and Super 2. You guys are pretty busy here for that off-season. Yep. Did anyone sleep that year? Probably not.
Four cars between December and February.
Probably not. Yep. And then another couple of years. So obviously there's a couple of elements I wanted to bring up with you in that whole process. So Garth comes back.
Yep.
Garth comes back with the likelihood he was probably going to drive a Volvo, but then that didn't play out.
Yep.
Was it always kind of the plan at your end? Because I got the impression from talking to him earlier in the year that it kind of was at his end without him thinking about it recently, that he'd come back here, drive a couple of years, and then play a part in the business. Was that the plan?
That was, yeah, that was the plan. Look, the plan was, you know, 2 years of driving at least, but and then – you know, he's got a good brain, Garth, presents very well, and, you know, incorporate him into the business side of what we do is what the plan was. And, look, it didn't play out that way. And to be honest, I don't know if you want to talk about that now. I'm happy to talk about that now.
We can go wherever we like, mate. We've got no rules.
Yeah, it was Yeah, so if you said it was a 20, what was it last year? 2019, wasn't it? So that was
the boost cars.
Yeah, and we had Richie and Garth here. And again, that was, I mentioned before about Dahlgren had been part of the sponsor arrangement when we took Volvo and Boost were big supporters of Richie's, Richie Stanaway. And to be honest, he's a tremendous young guy. You know, we're all a bit different in life and he's got different ways about him, but really great fellow and good to see him back too, by the way. Mm. And obviously Peter Addon came along, offered us a deal, but had to take Richie. And we had James Golding here. And
so it was Golding
and Garth. So it was Golding and Garth in 18. And, you know, Gary had given Golding, you know, his word that he'd get more than 1 year, and he had to make a decision. Like we needed the boost money to go racing, and that really hurt Gary too, because again, you know, he wants to go racing in his terms, and it was probably really the catalyst of exiting at the end. You know, that the fact is, if we can't go racing in our terms, you know, it's probably time to not go racing, and we really. It was either take the boost money and run James Golding and Richie, or don't go racing. And, you know, it was, I remember the Garth, we knew just before Christmas, it was, I can't remember, it was like the 23rd or 24th, 23rd of December, I think it was. It was a couple of days before Christmas. We knew what was going to happen. And so I was talking to Gary and I think Garth was in Japan and said to Gary, you know, what are we doing here? And he said, well, there's no point ruining his holiday. It's not going to make any difference now. Just let him have his holiday. And as soon as he's back, we'll get him in. And I think he came back. It was either between Christmas and New Year, or might have been just right on New Year. And, you know, the shop was closed. It must have been Christmas and New Year. We got Garth in and, you know, very tough for Gary to do it. And obviously very tough for Garth to hear the news, but that's what we had to do to keep going. And, you know, again, great to see that he's landed on his feet. I mean, he got the 888 endurance drive, which I know that's not how he wanted to say goodbye to motorsport, and he wanted an opportunity to do it on his own terms. And, you know, we're sorry for that. But, you know, you've got to keep moving on. And, to see what he's been able to achieve since then, and now, you know, in the media, we spoke briefly before we even started here. I mean, he's a standout. I mean, I really like listening to Garth and the way he goes about it. Yeah, I think the bridge will eventually mend. You know, no doubt he was hurt by it all. But, you know, Gary, straight shooter. There was no messing around, and it's just what had to happen. And so that was that, yeah.
So would it be fair to say that the bridge has been slightly repaired, rebuilted, or is it still in ruins in the river?
No, I think okay. Look, you know, Garth moved on, and, you know, but sure, he won't avoid us if we cross paths out there. If he sees Gary, say good day and things. I don't think there's any... You know, but it's tough, those things, you know, and it is, I don't know if sad's the right word, certainly disappointing when a guy that's done what he's done probably didn't get the opportunity to, you know, on his own terms, do a race and say, see you all later. That's probably the thing, and you can't undo that.
Yeah.
But on the same token, he's to his credit, he's dug in and he's pressed on and really gone on well with his career, you know, outside of a full-time seat, so good on him.
I had him on the pod earlier in the year, okay. And he did say that he was really pissed that he didn't get the chance to do what he knew was his last round, to be able to have the people who are part of it, to be there for when you know it. And it's a bit like footy. Not every player gets to retire on their own
terms. The fairy tale send-off, exactly.
You know, win a premiership.
Yeah.
Wave to the crowd and walk off.
Shane Crawford.
You know, your awful man. Exactly. 2008. Or, you know, Chris Judd, snaps a hammy or a calf or whatever it was, gets carted off. That's the end of his career. It's just kind of the way that it works out. But I guess there was a workforce of 20, 30, however many people you have here to try. But if you look, I mean, it's 5 years ago now. Time's flying pretty quickly here. Had you toyed with the concept of leaving supercars before you did?
No, look, Gary, look, he loves motorsport, and that's, to be honest, that's the catalyst of why we go racing. It's the love of it. Again, with the drivers, he getting the satisfaction out of bringing drivers in, getting them going and getting results. And from a commercial aspect, you know, look, he's prepared to spend some of his money to go motor racing, but, you know, it is an extremely expensive sport, which we all know that, you know, really based on the back of the equipment that you run around with and the travelling and everything else. And really, it was getting tougher commercially to go racing. Obviously, a bit of a lifeline with Boost there in 2019, and really, I think the fact again of being forced to take a driver that you might not necessarily have chosen yourself, and then commercially getting more difficult. I think the fun was going out of it for him, and just decided that's it.
But what tipped the scales to the point of, you know what, we're out of? I mean, it's the number one championship in the land that the team's been in for, what, 25 odd years.
Yeah.
What tipped the scales?
I think he had, look, and I don't want to speak out of school for him, but he had some concerns about the direction of where the business was going and, you know, and a few other things. I think it was probably a number of things. If you said, what was the actual driving force of it all? He probably wasn't having fun in pit lane there anymore, you know, if he said, and that it wouldn't have just all been about that, but I think it was a number of things. And, you know, he's a real big supporter of more race meetings. I think, what year was it we did, 15 or 16? That's it. That's what we love, you know. And
yeah, I think it got up to 16 I think in 2019, 18.
Yeah, so there's a lot of that sort of bits and pieces going on. Nothing hardcore, one individual thing you'd say caused it, but it was just, that was it. And, yeah, so that was that, but we certainly kept a close eye on it.
Yeah, it's and you still got a connection though. You still do some work for supercar teams here because a lot of people think of you as a race team running race cars.
Yeah.
But there's the engineering element of this business
that's
too.
Right.
That people probably don't quite understand.
Yeah, we've got a engineering side of it, composite room, fab shop here. Erebus around the corner here, often doing some repairs for them when little bits and pieces get knocked around. I think we might have even built the tail lights for the Mustang here, you know, first Ford part we've built for a long time. Goes back to when Gary was running around the Thunderdome in his Ford. So we're doing bits and pieces for some supercar teams still,
Cool. When supercars ended, so there was a crossover because the TCR and ARG stuff was started by that point.
Yeah.
But that last weekend in 19 in Newcastle where the final round was, I remember in the garage after the last race on Sunday, there were, Lee Holdsworth was in there. There was a bunch of former drivers, former people who worked at other teams, in for a beer. That was it for GRM in supercars. Was that a proud weekend? Was it emotional? Was it, just business as usual? What was the feeling?
Yeah, certainly. If you said from my point, looking at Dad and what he'd done, I was certainly very proud of what he'd done, and obviously the current workforce that were there, and been a lot of people come through over the years, and they're certainly, proud. Gary, he is a little bit of emotional. He was, and supercars gave him a nice send off there, hitting around the track, and that's not really his go. He sort of probably preferred to just disappear into the corner and have a beer with his mates, and the time that a lot of the past people that have been here, give, like you're saying, Lee and other workers and things, come into the garage having a beer, it shows, really what Gary's done, and for those sort of people to still have that affection for him is great. Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to have to be a party pooper. I know. That's the end of part one. You're going to have to wait now for us to release part two. If you're listening to this down the track, part two will be ready to go in the V8 Sleuth Vault, ready for you to have a listen to. If you're listening to this as it's been released, fear not, next week is when part two of Barry Rogers will be released. Now, we've largely covered the supercars era on this part of the pod, but there's plenty more spicy stuff in part two. The new era of GRM with its TCR cars, S5000, how that category brought GRM and the Rogers family into ARG. We talk about Trans Am, all the things that are wrong, all the things that are right, and all the things that hopefully in the future can be fixed. The trials and tribulations of the buy-in and subsequent sell-out of their involvement with race and supercars, and why, in his view, it didn't go as he'd expected. That's all next time. In the meantime, go and listen to some of our old episodes. If you haven't heard them all, there's plenty there for you to listen to. If you've got a suggestion for a future guest, we'd love to hear from you too. Jump on the V8 Sleuth website, check out the contact page there and get in touch. Or, of course, you can get us on all of the places that you would normally find us on social media. Facebook, we're on Insta, we're on X, we're kind of everywhere. So you'll know where to find us. In the meantime, I'm done. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Aaron Noonan. I will chat to you again next week with another edition of the V8 Sleuth Podcast. Powered by Castrol. Australian Muscle Car Magazine is one of the most respected voices in motoring media. There's been over 140 issues and thousands of stories published in the last 22 years.
from the amazing muscle car machines of the past to the present, and the stars that steered and built them. AMC has something for everyone. Delve into the heritage of homegrown high performance now at musclecarmag.com.au.